Hey everybody, it's Writers in the Round, and we have three very active, very enthusiastic, wonderful personalities to share an hour with. Let me introduce you to first Monica Wright, who makes music with a band called Margot and the Toothless Hags, which everybody's already agreed is the kind of name that if you didn't come up with it, you wish you did.
Pretty much.
It's a Harry Potter kind of name, isn't it?
It really kind of is. It's just one of those names that you're like, that just will stay in my head for the rest of my life. It just will be there. It's just such a good name.
It's well-rounded.
You see what I mean? When it just started. This is Lily, Lily Ford. And Lily is a poet and has been on this program 3 or 4 times, haven't you?
I think it's about like 3.
Bernicia Lloyd, so I can formally introduce you. And Lily Ford are both poets. And as I say, Monica is a musician. This is from an EP.
The EP is going to be
like 5 songs, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah.
It's called Sides.
Yes, correct.
And that's coming out at the end of this month.
The end of this month.
I am so excited.
This is one of the songs that will be on it. It's called Doppelganger.
I saw a boy who looked a lot like you today. He sat alone and didn't talk to anybody. His brow was tight and looked just like life or death. Like the way you look late at night before you'd go to bed.
though, it lives up to the billing, don't you think? Margot and the Toothless Hags, I guess it's Monica. Monica Ryder makes music as Margot and the Toothless Hags, and that song lives up to that billing. Don't you think that what you'd expect a band like that to sound like?
Pretty good.
Very good, too, I thought.
Thank you very
much. It lived
up to
the billing.
I wanted to share with you, before we go off track again, something that Monica wrote that I think all three of you could probably relate. Well, obviously Monica could, but you could also. She's talking about why she writes, and she said, "Loneliness has caused such a hurt in culture and in my own life. My music is intended to make people feel heard, understood, and connected. Throughout every song that I write, I try my hardest to be honest and vulnerable about life's most formidable foes, depression, anxiety, heartache, and anger." So that's a good place to start, to just talk about what you do and why you do it, don't you think, all three of you?
Definitely. Yeah. Okay.
You want to start, Lily?
I guess
sounds so. Sounds like she does.
Sorry, I don't mean to. I was thinking, I was like, how, it's very funny because the one piece that I was like dead set on reading today is actually about something very similar to what you wrote about how, you know, depression and anxiety and just that crippling kind of loneliness kind of infects everyone nowadays. And I myself go through it more often than I would care to think of. And I often write in my pieces to kind of help myself understand what I'm feeling and get a tangible object out there and kind of pull it from myself so I don't have to handle it alone anymore, almost. And it's kind of a struggle sometimes, but in the end, it's very worth it to use your art as a coping mechanism for getting what you feel and what you think other people can relate to out there into the world.
When you write it, does it feel as if you've put it outside yourself, that it's something that you can kind of put parameters on, and it becomes more manageable because it becomes a thing that you can then step outside yourself and look at?
Sort of, kind of. It's like I'm copying what I'm feeling. It's not exactly me taking that one thing out, but it's me making a replication of it in a way that I can see it from a third-person perspective, and I'm not just caught up in the turmoil of it that's inside of me. It's more of a, oh, here's this thing. I can now see it clearer than I could 10 minutes ago before I just kind of word vomited onto this page and then, you know, go back and edited it. So it's good.
I really like that idea. I have been writing for a while, and when, you know, I started writing when I was in the eighth grade. And
I feel that.
And so when now I play songs that maybe I wrote 3 or 4 years ago, sometimes there are people who are like, really, you like feel that way? And it's like, no,
not now.
But there was a time and a place for that. And that's actually one reason that I changed my project's name from my own to Margot and the Toothless Hags, because I wanted a separation of myself and my product and my art, and creating sort of like a duplicate copy of the moment.
Uh-huh.
And you don't necessarily have to relive it every time that you present it again. Mm-hmm. That's something that I'm learning. Really?
Yeah.
Well, before we go any further, would you care to read that poem?
Yeah, Lily? Please do.
Totally, yeah. This is titled Inner and Unjudged Reflection, as my therapist has suggested. I sense steam stains on the shower door, water slipping from the top of the spine that is holding me hunched upright. I can feel the innards of my chest crawling from the giant gap I've made in my form's ribs. Metallic dances in my mouth. Animals escape my vocal cords in such a performance, the ringing of my eardrums calls for an encore. The concave chest growing larger, hot water possibly begins to replace all the blood I've now lost. I feel some warmth and light and gore drip hazily from these fingertips and leave it all by escape down the faucet drain. I watch the cocktail as it wanders away, somewhat pleased. My hair now hangs limply in this face called my own as it watches my thoughts carve deeper trenches. I muse to no one in particular. When will it all make sense?
Writing is therapy, eh?
Oh, 100%.
For all of you, is that true for you too, Bernicia?
For me, my writing, I write for people outside of myself sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am who I am, and I have this platform. So,
and who are you, Brenesia, in terms of, because I think it's interesting, you know, as Monica alluded to, that Margot is a persona. Mm. It's a way for you to perform and to perform these songs.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's kind of stepping outside yourself twice.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly.
And so is that what you do too, Brenesia? Because I know I've seen your Facebook page, and it's this wonderfully expansive photograph of Brenesia with her arms out like this, and Brenesia in huge letters behind her.
Yep.
Yeah. That makes Brenesia into a, in my mind, into a persona, a personality.
So, you know? With a name like mine, I think from, my mom gave me this name because my dad went through a B phase. I have over 20 siblings and we all go through phases. So he went through a B phase and I was a part of that. But a lot of people can't say my name. I've stopped correcting people. I've stopped trying to correct people. But I did this one show, Poetry Versus Hip Hop.
Mm.
Yeah. And so my poem was about my name and how it's never going to be said right. And I don't expect it to anymore. So I've just created this outside of myself person who is Brenesia. And she's like this like goddessy type person. And she's this like phantom. So when I write, and I write as her, I often write for the people in my community. So like all of my poems are Black poems because that's who I am. I'm a Black woman who is often put in situations like in this room, I'm the only Black person. And I'm always in that situation because I have a different platform than some of my other brothers and sisters. So most of my writing is so other Black people and other younger Black poets specifically can know that they have platforms and that they have a voice. And like, we're all basically the same person, but we're all gonna have people who can't say our names. And we're all gonna have people who are gonna misjudge us because people who are listening to this only hear the way I talk. And since I have, I'm not gonna say white, I have a nationally recognized rhetoric in my tone, it's easier for people to approach me. So my writing then becomes this outside of myself, but still very stereotypically angry Black woman, still very much like, I can say the N-word because I'm Black. Like, I'm gonna cuss and be loud and be boisterous because that's a piece of my culture. But at the same time, I can give you a, hi, my name is Brenesia. I also go by 9. It's really nice to meet you. But then I turn around and have like, yeah, a group of drug dealers and game makers as my neighbors type vibe. I don't know if that makes sense, but.
That makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And you are much too polite. As long as I've known you, I had no idea that I was mispronouncing your name. Now I know.
That's the thing.
I'll never do it again.
It's easy.
Because it's annoying.
It's not. See, that's the thing.
It is to me because I think that. There's so much a part of who you are. What we're called is it in some sense who we are, right? It's important that somebody at least makes some effort to pronounce it correctly.
I guess, but like growing up, my whole thing has been as long as you hear me, call me what
I'm
you
with
want.
You. I'm with
like,
you.
I just love being heard.
That.
And I feel like my name is a part of it. Like, yeah, it's a brand. Like, you can brand yourself, name yourself. Nobody has my name. It's always going to be said wrong because it doesn't make any sense. But if you hear me and you decide to, like, listen and be like, oh, I almost cussed. You decide to be like, oh, crap, that makes so much sense. Like, I understand what she's saying regardless of what my name is. You can call me Amanda and I'll be like, all right, yeah, you heard me.
Would you care to share a poem?
Sure. So this one I done on Hibber 4 because it's one of my favorites. It's called A Dehumanizing Statement.
Oh, I love this one.
Hunger. We growl and spit at the wild boar whom harbor hate in their gun holsters as they find the power rush they have been searching for inside of the bellies of our slain young. They are attempting to tame a species that has never wanted to enter the suburban highlands. They gentrify our backyard and leave us homeless in the midst of deforestation and the killing of our nation, huffing wholeheartedly that this is for the best, that tearing down everything around us will only make us stronger, as if we don't know how to build from the ground up already. Killing our young will only make us prosper. Herding cattle for 25 years to life is all right as long as they know their Miranda rights, right? Then you, You call yourself friend, brother from another mother. Say you understand that you can relate in a way that you can still stand back away from the hate. You get the backlash of the whip crack that has an entire pack of animals scattering. You stand by in the outlands and only subsidize us when our documentary comes out, informing you of our endangerment as if you didn't already know. In response to the sudden information, you are startled from your sunbathing. So you begin to hunt for the wild boar yourself. You spit in the face and your children do the same. You crawl on all fours and crouch in broad daylight, watching and waiting to lunge, howling with excitement. You have found the rush you have been searching for inside of our struggle, found your purpose in our hunting season. You wait for praise and imprinting from those around you, puffing and chuffing with pride as you stand on your hind legs and curl your top lip with utter bewilderment that you survive. Your run-in with the wild boar is one you will tell us about. All of your undomesticated friends will be here to listen until they remember slaughterhouse rules don't apply to house pets.
Bernija Lloyd, our guest, I love the way you write, but I also love the way that you present your poem. And I'm wondering if when you write, do you write for the page or do you write to speak it?
I am so bad at writing for the page. I write to speak it because I've always done spoken poetry. Like, that's all that I've known because my mom has only done spoken poetry. I was recently starting writing for the page, and it's so weird because when I perform it, you know what I'm trying to get you. You know what I'm giving you because I'm giving you all of the emotion in the moment. But on the page, I have to use more description and more words. I've used wispy so much for some reason, and because it gives off this soft vibe. Like, when you're wispy, you're soft. And so I use that, and I use, like, yanking. I've had to learn so much about language and the difference for the page versus out loud. But, yeah, I don't know.
Because it strikes me that you use words for their sound as well as for their meaning.
Mm.
Yeah, it's almost like you're singing.
I don't know.
What's up?
What's up? I don't know. I do write songs for people, never for myself. So when I write to music, I already know what tone someone wants, so it's easier for me to write in that way. Versus, like, writing poetry, I think when you don't have a beat, you have to create your own really, really fast and, like, put this idea behind it as soon as you can. So, like, using words, like, my favorite aggressive word is yank. Like, you're yanking something. I don't know why.
It's a good
word. It makes me so happy because, like, if I'm yanking something, like, I am grabbing it. I am pulling and I'm, like, trying to hurt something versus, like, pulling.
Mm-hmm.
Pulling and yank have such different connotations somehow. And they're the same meaning. One of them just feels more aggressive. Like, I'm keeping this thing and I'm going to grab it as fast as I can and you're not going to be able to pull it away from me.
That's what that telegraphs to me.
Makes me so happy. I get giddy with words that I find have such good meanings. Like, I learned from my mentor that, like, people used to use the word stop and then put other ST words right beside it so you can keep that. Because when you picture stop, you picture red. And red is such an aggressive, like, color. So you're like, stop. The whole, like, curve of the word puts so much pressure behind it. I don't know if that makes sense to people, but I find that so fascinating. And when I find a word, I like latch on to it because it makes me happy, so I'll use it as much as possible and then create a whole poem around it. Like, I have a whole, like, aggressive poem literally using the word yank 16 times just because I got obsessed with it. I'm so, like, compulsive when I write.
With hip-hop, one of the complaints on the part of many people is that there's a lot of cursing in it.
Mm-hmm.
As a radio programmer, it's a real challenge because to edit out those curse words is often to edit out literally the expletive, that point that is explosive. What you're talking about, like yank, for instance, because it's got that wonderful hard syllable at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is why curse words are so prevalent, not only in hip-hop, but just in our general discourse, because it's a way to, you can almost bite off the end of the word.
Yeah.
You know, it's such an expressive way to say what you're feeling. When you're writing songs, Monica, are you thinking like Bernaja that it's as much about sound as it is about meaning? Or do you not think like that?
Very much so. No, I would definitely agree with you. Especially lately when I've been writing, and oftentimes I just start saying words that sound nice together, and oftentimes they inherently have a meaning in the end, they attach to a larger collection of words that have a larger purpose, but
right, because the reason the EP is called Sides, that's an intellectual concept, right? You wanted to make an argument, a point, that any given issue can be looked at from more than one point of view.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Love that.
So
you're making a point, you are articulating an argument, but at the same time, you're thinking about the sound.
Yeah, for sure. And that's exactly what you do as well, of you're making a point while, you know, I think all three of us do that, you know? That's all three of our jobs is to make a point while allowing our words to flow in a specific way that poignantly hit with a connection and a
certain chord.
Yeah, with a chord and a certain emotion.
Exactly.
That is connected to those words.
Can you play that song that you were talking about?
I'm actually going to play a different song other than Hercules. I'm so sorry.
Don't be, that's okay.
Because it has the same concept where I wrote it with words that you don't commonly expect to hear in a song. And it's actually about a plant.
I love that.
At the forest school that I work, called Hearts of Bustin. And it is a very like mundane plant, but once in a while it has these bright red buds that come out for about 3 weeks out of the year. And then it goes back to being a very boring plant, and it reminded me of the relationship that I have with my brother. It's very mundane and hard to connect with him most of the time, but then there are moments where I see like his actual care for me, and those are very beautiful moments. So this is called Hearts of Bustin.
The studio's not that sophisticated.
It's fine. Clouds, and I wonder if you're ever coming down. I wish I could look into your eyes, and I wonder if you are as confused as I. But your heart's a bustin', I can see, and I'll wait for what your seasons bring to watch your colors. Some red, ooh, ooh. Ooh, ooh. Quelling the panic of letting you in. Childhood toys to tattoo to my skin. But after all this goddamn love I've given, am I still bring to watch your colors, to watch your colors, to watch your colors, to watch your colors, blossom red. Colors, to watch your colors, to watch your colors. blossom red.
Monica Wright is our guest, but you'll find Monica's music as Margot and the Toothless Hags. Is that song going to be on the EP?
No!
What?
Oh no! I fell in love with something that can't be on a thing! Oh no! Oh god, I fell in love with that song. It's so good.
You mentioned poetry versus hip-hop, and that's been, this sort of ongoing thing of...
What's
the relationship
times.
Between the two, right? And then you have this kind of showdown between the two styles.
Yes.
Is your poetry first, because Brenija already said that it is, performance first.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have to write it on the page, you wouldn't want to write a performance poem on the page, really, would you? Because there'd be something would be okay. lost. It's a bit like reading one of Monica's songs without hearing her sing it and without the melody.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
It's weird. It honestly is. I have had my roommate read things because I like to give her like the chance to look at it and mm-hmm. learn from it because she's also trying to get into writing.
I get it.
And so I write signals on my whenever I write down things, I'll write signals like squiggly lines to be like, stress this word. If someone was doing an entire sonnet out loud, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would make sense if it was on the page. But if you have somebody do something like a duplex, which is something Jericho Brown invented, where it's a mashup of everything,
yeah.
it's a little bit harder to like grasp everything at once on mm-hmm. the page.
Share another one of your poems with us, Lily.
But I was debating on whether to read this, mostly because it's a very personal piece that I really haven't shown many people, and it's one of my very favorite pieces I've ever written. But I'm gonna try and be vulnerable. I'm gonna try and put myself out there.
Love that.
You know. So this is titled "A Tragedy, One After the Other, to the Power of Four." I'm saddened now by our texts more often than not, for you see, only half of the story panned out. Four kids, two best friends, two brothers, the beginning to any rom-com, coming-of-age melodrama sitcom. Each developed feelings over one summer. All fell in love with their respective partner at the exact same time. The script was perfect. The characters set up for an arc and a redemption, and then the writer changed. In Sparks to W. Shakespeare, no one knew until after the Exodus. Until after poet picked prey, I still don't understand why it had to be the two of us, but there is no use in looming over which pair survived and who became the tragedy. When half of the quartet survived to hum sweet songs in the dead of night, the other two split apart by irrational miscommunication and inept understanding of human emotion. The play rages on. Two girls now text in the dead of night. One says, I am so in love, I shall explode with the fervor that he brings. Two replies, I am dumbfounded and clawing at my throat for words, but I am happy for the both of you. One responds, I'm pleased that our love brings you joy. And two gives a half-hearted, quite defeated, more or less. It is hard, I have decided, to be in this script any longer. There is no way out. No escape of the author's pen whilst it teeters on the thread-thin line between comedy and catastrophe. One must grit teeth and bear it when one is the product of life's humor. Must bite down pride after nailing the part after signing your heart away to a character and the tragic stage performance of it all.
Lily Ford. Thank you, Lily.
There's a, going off of that idea completely, there's a song that I'm currently in the middle of writing.
Oh, a whole mood.
Let's go.
That is, the main like line of the chorus is, all you want is to be cared for.
I do.
And it's this concept of all anyone wants is to be cared about.
Mm-hmm. That is really...
And all, like, the planet needs is to be cared for.
True.
All friends and people and communities need is to be cared for and to care for others. And not to be too reductive, but that concept was very striking to me, so I ended up I'm in the middle of a song about it. But that's what you're talking about.
It's, yes.
Is to be heard, to be cared for. For me to care about you is to hear you.
Exactly.
And I think we've lost that somehow. Like, we're very much like a disconnect type of society now. They're like, oh, I like your Facebook post, but you're not listening. Like, I know.
You're
just liked it because it was a meme. Like, you don't understand the meme.
I often find myself, like, scrolling through something, and if something, I just like things. Like, I find myself doing that, and I get upset because it's like, why did I like it? Is it just because it, like, caught my eye?
I like so many SpongeBob memes. Don't know what's going on. It just sounds so dumb. This sounds like such a first world. Like,
this is
memes.
Such a first world problem. I'm so sorry.
Our memes are being liked. But, like, I don't know. I think it's easier to have conversations with people in my generation now through memes. Like, the
You're
World War
wrong.
III memes made so many people, like, scared that it was like, yes, be afraid. Be very afraid. Or, like, I don't know. If that makes any sense to anyone, hopefully it
Hope
does.
Hope it does.
Because we're such a, it's just because we're an internet-based society now, and all of our conversation comes through the internet and Facebook and Snapchat, so we have to, like, apparently communicate through memes. I don't know why, but that's how I talk to people now instead of having actual conversations, I guess.
That's a whole mood. Going off that, like, internet thing, it's so strange because the internet is something that ties us all together very easily. Like, you can talk to anyone all over the world so easily, but you're not really communicating. Because when you're talking to someone and you, like, see them eye to eye, or, like, you look someone dead in the face, there's a certain connection there that you can't really get from anywhere else. And I've had, like, long-distance friendships for years now, and they're not horribly long-distance. Some of them were, but some of them are just, you know, halfway across the state, and they're just too far for me to see them all the time. But there is, like, a certain difference between being able to, like see someone and them tangibly be there and just saying things over the internet. There is a specific difference between it. And I can't really put my finger on it besides the humanity of it. But there's a distinct difference between just being able to say something or, like, send a meme or, like, just send anything to try and talk to someone and them actually putting forth the effort to, like, see you and, like, talk to you and express their feelings and what they're thinking about a certain topic or about a certain situation or about their lives in general.
What keeps running through my mind is that it's true what Monica said, that we all want to be cared for.
Very much.
Very much. Someone,
and it takes
please.
A lot of courage to say what you think.
That's
in
where
a forum where you want to be cared about.
Yeah. There's the rub, as Macbeth says.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, too, because I didn't grow up, like, with computers. I had, like, computers when I was in, like, I used computers when I was in, like, middle school and stuff like that, in high school, to write and stuff.
I get that.
But I didn't really join social media until I was, like, mid-high school. Like, I got a Facebook when I was, like, a junior or senior in
high
school.
My mom made me make her a PowerPoint of why I wanted a Facebook.
That's a mood.
It had to be over 10 slides, and I had to put my sources.
That's incredible. But yeah, it's. I was on tour with a guy, and he was like, it's kind of crazy how you aren't addicted to your phone.
I yeah.
was like, really? Mm-hmm. That's, like, a weird thing for, like,
a
22-year-old to feel. And he was like, yeah, that's very strange. I was like, oh. It's probably not as strange as he may think, because I think that's how a decent number of my friends are disconnected to technology. But it is interesting how it, as communicators, which is our job,
yeah.
we are inherently communicators, how I have to now use a lot of social media to create my, we got connected because of social media, and that's the main way that I get gigs. And it's
very strange having to, like, make your own platform using social media.
When you're not that person.
Yeah.
I am that person, but I still don't make a platform.
I'm, like, halfway between. Like, I'm very ADD, so it's like I'll just pick up my phone and just lazily look through things, but I'm not, like, putting effort into it. So it's like there's a part of me that's like, I don't need my phone, but then I just get bored.
Right. So and it's like, where does your...
Where does my boredom go?
Where are you going to just end up...
You get a fidget
up,
clicker thingy. The little box with all the buttons on it. I have one of those now. Instead of pushing my phone.
My school outlawed those.
Yeah.
Those and fidget spinners, because everyone just had them and they were using them as toys, not just like...
I was the person who outlawed them partially at my school.
Okay. I'll tell you what, to close, I'd like for each of you to read a poem. And Monica, if you want, I'll play that other recording that you have.
Great. Sounds wonderful.
But before you share one of your poems, tell everybody one thing you absolutely want people to know about you.
You get to go first. You're on the end.
Oh, what?
Yeah, you get to go first.
I guess.
So, hi, I'm Lily Ford. I'm a communications person. And I think the one identifying factor about myself is I desperately try to love everyone I meet, which is kind of hilarious and ends me up in very funny situations. But I try to look at everyone with like a clean slate, and I attempt to view them with as much compassion as I would want to be, have had, that's not it, as much compassion as I would like to have viewed towards me, you know?
And from what I know of you, I think that's true.
Oh.
And I'm curious, given that, how that impacts you as a writer.
Deeply, I think. It's very interesting when you're going through this thing called life and you want to love everyone, but so many situations come up that you can't. And you can't help them the way you would like to. And therefore, all that kind of frustration ends up in my writing and ends up kind of spewing out in that sort of sense. You know, sometimes my writing is about myself, and sometimes it is about certain situations of people that I've made into different kind of characters. Like a poem I read on here once called The Promise She Can't Keep Much Longer was deeply based in the roots of feminism and how women are expected to be one sort of thing, and they often look outside of themselves wanting to be another. And I've had many women in my life go through that, and it deeply hurts me and concerns me and makes me very frustrated with society. I myself even have gone through that, and it's very painful. And knowing that other people have makes me very upset.
And so by definition, when you write and you take a stand and you make a statement, there's always the possibility that somebody's not going to like you for saying that.
Yeah, and that's something I've kind of struggled with my entire life. The concept of people not liking me is one that my brain just doesn't like to compute. But as I've gotten older, there have been people that just don't care for me. And I've had to realize that there's enough care within myself for myself not to take that as like a deafening blow, you know?
Love a mature queen, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a personal journey. I think something that everyone has to go through. Maybe I'll write a poem about it.
That's the courage I was talking about. that's you know, the courage to be yourself. It takes a lot of courage, but in order to be performers, you have to be yourselves.
Mm, pretty much.
As you are. When you were singing, Monica, I remember people saying that at least some people have compared you to Joni Mitchell.
Mm.
And I think maybe it's the quality of your voice and the way you sing. But it also struck me how much guts she had to do what she did at the time she did it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was more than 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And this is a woman writing about what it is to be a 22 or 23-year-old woman in the world at a time when women just didn't do that.
Yeah,
you know, pretty much.
There was no template for that. There was no role model, you know?
Gosh, I love the bravery of artists. Makes me real happy to be one.
Yeah, she's
so on that note, would you care to share one with us?
Of course. So this doesn't really tie into that whole thing. This is just a piece I really, really enjoy performing. It's called A Human Experience. Hold on. The title is very long. Human experience in which you stand in a parking lot and memories flood your cranium. The stench of smoke and the smell of grease fills my nose as I walk through that neighborhood. As I stand in the spot where our cars used to deteriorate, I walk the laps my mother and I would do to get out of the house and away from it all. My days were filled with rickety scooters and jumping on squeaky trampolines, but that stench of cigarette buds and broken bottles, of blood and burnt vegetables still fills my mind at times. This isn't very poetic, nor do I believe it should be, for when reminiscing on memories, we should be solemn. Not in remorse for what is past, but for all we endured with grinning smiles and all we would become without them. In respect for the people we once were and could have been. We lived behind a teriyaki house, a donut shop, and a Chili's. This is where we dealt with perpetual screaming and cracked windowpane glass. We dealt with blood, burnt vegetables, cigarette buds, sorrow, trampolines, until we decided enough and bounced our way into a better life. We live, we hurt, we love, we move on, and that is the general memory of every human experience. I stand in the parking lot of the teriyaki place and wonder silently to the car exhaust around me, who would I be if I still lived where I could smell metallic red on the walls, where I could see black in his aura? I could feel it seeping into that house, a non-living structure. I could feel it breaking at its base and dying from the mold leaking into our lives, like it had skin and nerves, like it had emotion, like it knew what I was going through. The trampoline was the only good part, I feel. I feel as if I just crossed my own barrier of being solemn, but it is good to get things out, I suppose. It is good to remember those past times of thinking like a child, of hiding in a closet because the raging voices were too loud for such little ears. It is good to remember your past self since they are still cowering within your soul, still crying and yearning for something better than what they have been dealt. It is good to smell the aroma of cigarettes, uncut grass, soot, and grease that I never wish to consume again. It is good to be home.
And one of the reasons that I invite our Lily to come back again and again is because as yet she hasn't published any of these poems. And so this is the first time that it gets a public airing, a public forum. But that is going to change, isn't it, Lily?
I really hope so.
Let me rephrase that question for you, Bernice. As a writer, as a public personality, what is it that you want to express to people? What is it that you want to say to the world, I guess?
That's a little less stressful. Okay. One of the big things I like to talk about and what comes across is that everybody is more than their background. Everybody is more than their voice, their skin tone, the shape, whatever you want to define it, person as. There's so much more in depth. Like, I've been described as plenty of things. Mostly goes back to that big black girl. Mm. It's my favorite one. I want it like tattooed on my arm really, really bad.
I love you.
And I also get like, oh, you like the talk white thing. My favorite thing on the planet is to hear from mostly people who are black. It's like, oh, you know, you sound white, right? Or white people call it articulate, which is just a nice way of saying you don't sound like your color, which is really fun to hear. So I guess my main thing is just like everyone should be on the same playing field because we're all literally just people who speak different or look different. And it's so dumb that we put so much weight on small characteristics. Like it should be more than like, yeah, she's black. Like, yeah, I'm black. Surprise, surprise. You know, this guy's blue. Ooh, wow. Expect more from yourself to the point where you don't even have to like think about race, of course, because that's a big problem here in America. Mm. But think about it with enough knowledge to know that not everyone's a threat around you just because they don't look the way you do.
Yep.
Please share one of your poems.
Sure. This one is Backstory. It's one of the ones, the most recent time I've won Poetry versus Hip Hop has been with this poem. It's so scribbly. I probably can't read it as good, but I'm going to try. I've had the privilege of watching my mama stand on her tiptoes my whole life, with her hands reached out in front of her, holding on to her wits' end. She is pulling out credit cards and bouncing checks, fighting cancer ulcers in Section 8. We've bought our red meat from the same Save-A-Lot for the 5 and 20 deal all my life, made more spaghetti than anyone could ever eat again. My mama is my best teacher. Taught me the concept of compensation because we're all compensating for something, whether we say it or not. My mama taught me about MLK before February. told me about low men and high men and how the high men like to keep the low men low by putting liquor stores on every corner in the projects. The best thing my mama taught me was there is no voice willing to speak up for us. So it's a good thing we learned how to yell. I found prophecy in my profanity, found solstice in my soul, got my hustle from my hood, spit verses in the womb, causing people wounds when I find my tune. I got my grammar in my back pocket, just in case you get it twisted. I've been here, I've been big, been black, been found my voice in my dream girls wannabe days, found my rhythm in the rhythm of my ancestors, got my hymns in my back pocket, waiting for somebody to say something I can't understand. I've been here, waiting to come back, fake once, didn't do it again. I've preached to my brothers and sisters about unity because we've been force-fed it, and now I want to cook it low, give us some time to understand it, and it's hard. We get caught up in this whirlwind of fake friends, fake men, fake edges, lace fronts, and everything we can't come back from. But we've got something to look forward to. Nobody mentions how good the hood can love you. But I got you. Sometimes when you need someone, all you got is your neighbor. When there's a blackout or a brownout in your neighborhood, and everyone comes out in bonnets and nightcaps, you have your hood. Tell your brother, your mother, that I am here for you. You ain't gotta wait for nobody to buy you your 40 acres and a mule. You can buy it yourself because your hood is here. Your hood has taught you hustle, has taught you survival, taught you that the fittest survive together, that sometimes unity and diversity are basically the same thing because diverse people only know how to stick together. Because when someone looks like you, occasionally you can only find solstice and soul and hustle and rhythm inside of them because no one will teach you that. You gotta know that your hood loves you more than anyone ever could, that everyone outside of your hood might just try to cut you down. So go and grow and love your hood, whether it compensates for everything, no matter how many liquor stores are around you, no matter if your drug dealers become your brothers. Love your hood because your hood loves you.
Yes.
God damn. It's very hard for me to hear you say that and not and not just snap furiously the entire time.
Thank you. I try.
Gosh, it's so good.
We're talking about being liked and being understood. And it strikes me there's a kind of interesting confluence between the two ways in which you present yourself to the world as a teacher and as a performer.
Yeah.
Do you see commonalities with those two?
Yes. Exceptionally. I think, I hope that it's more based out of me being a learner than me being an instructor in any way, that I'm open to new ideas and trying out new things constantly and learning from other people. But yeah, constantly you're gonna have the connection of wanting to explain myself.
As you said in your, well, we'll call it a bio for want of a better term.
Yeah.
That what was important to you and why you were writing, at least one of the reasons you were writing, is to communicate and to be understood.
Yeah.
When you are communicating to the children, sort of help to grow into the person that they should be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When you are singing for an audience of adults, you are helping them to come to terms with the person that they have become.
Yeah, and also to grow into the people who they hope to be. Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, I never view a person's journey as ended until your heartbeat has. Similarly, sort of a less of a guide, obviously, I never think of myself as that when I'm writing, but more as hopefully a person who has a side of a story that maybe someone hadn't thought about before, and more to bring up an idea and let the person take that idea and mull and come up for themselves with whatever sort of end point that they wish.
But in a sense, you're a sort of indirect guide. You obviously don't intend to proselytize. You're not a preacher. You're not when you write. But at the same time, by distilling your own feelings, you're in effect distilling the feelings of those who are listening, aren't you?
Yeah, I hope so.
You're articulating them.
Yeah,
anyway.
At least. Yeah, hopefully.
I think that's the goal.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly for me, of making people feel heard. and inherently, I feel heard through it. But of course, that's secondary.
And I like the idea that there's more than one side to a story.
Yeah. Yeah, like, for example, Doppelganger, which we played earlier, was like a post-breakup song. So like the classic breakup songs that are kind of like angry and aggravated, or like wishing that they would come back, were very much gone. And then the aftermath of where you remember the few good things about the person, or not so few, you know, it depends on the person.
Yeah.
You remember those things with grace and with kindness and with kind eyes on the story that you had with them. And that's where that song comes from, which is not a sort of like a counterintuitive breakup song inherently. And Your Room, which you're going to play soon, is a part of a relationship. And it can be taken many different ways of any sort of relationship, of a beginning to get to know someone and just wanting to be in their presence. You don't have to be talking to them. You don't have to be like kissing them, you don't have to be anything, but just being in the same room as them is very comforting and peaceful and positive thing for you at the time.
Okay.
And that can lead down so many different roads. So it's not like the epitome of a love story. It's not the breakup of the love story. It's not any of those sort of things. It's not like the best friend moment where you'll never leave each other's sides. It's before that all happens. It's just having a really good feeling about someone and wanting to spend more time with them. So,
thank you so much. It's been so much fun. It's a pleasure to meet you,
Monica.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Lily, Benaja, it was great, as always.
Lovely to meet you guys.
We will do this again.
Oh, definitely.
Let's go. I'm excited. We have a whole date, guys, so.